You are listening to the Beyond Yoga Teacher Training Podcast. I am your host, Sandy Raper. On this podcast, I will share stories and invite conversations that will help you grow and support sustainability within your yoga practice, your pathway of service as a yoga teacher, and beyond. Welcome back to the Beyond Yoga Teacher Training Podcast. I am your host, Sandy Raper. It is hard to believe that I am quickly approaching 100 episodes of the podcast and the 2-year anniversary of the launch of the Beyond Yoga Teacher Training Podcast. And my wheels are turning as to how I might celebrate and share with you and invite you to celebrate with me in the celebration of 100 episodes and the 2-year anniversary. So stay tuned. I've got a feeling some exciting things are going to come to celebrate. Before I get into today's episode, let me first say thank you. Thank you if you have been a faithful listener of the podcast. And then if you are new, if you're a new listener to the podcast, then welcome. Thank you so much for joining me today. Wherever you are and however long you have been listening, I am so glad that you are here. I want to encourage you to spend some time checking out the past episodes that I have available that span over 4 seasons now. I believe I've covered a lot of great topics, and I have had some pretty amazing conversations, I might add, with some quite influential guests making an impact out in our world as yoga teachers. It is my hope that you are finding and will continue to find this podcast as a valuable resource for you to deepen your understanding of the yoga practice and find relevance in applying all that is shared on this podcast into your daily life as an individual and those of you that listen that are teachers in your pursuits as a teacher in the practice. With that said, if there's something that really stands out for you about the podcast or a topic that has been shared, then please consider sharing a review on Apple Podcasts. Reviews and ratings really do support podcasts in growing and connecting with other listeners. I appreciate you, and I am grateful to have you as a part of the Beyond Yoga Teacher Training Podcast community of listeners. Let's get into today's episode. Let me begin by asking you this. When you hear the word yoga pose or posture, what comes to mind? Do you immediately see the image of your favorite pose or quite possibly a pose that you find challenging? It's interesting, really, how we relate to yoga postures and the feelings and emotions that emerge and we evoke as we practice them or possibly when we just think about them. Interestingly, too, is the representation of yoga poses that, from my understanding and study, are quite differing from the interpretation that I believe we find described within the ancient text and study of yoga. Today, I want to share with you in this episode what I have come to know and find within my personal practice and as a teacher of the practice to be the most important pose, and that would be the ability to posture yourself to be present and aware for the experience you're having in the shape we call the yoga pose, and also to be an inquiry into why you do what you do and how does this movement in and out of the shapes we call yoga postures in a yoga class, how does this support this inquiry? In classes, I often hear teachers use the language or directive of finding the pose. And what I believe the intent of this directive to be is for us, the student or the practitioner, to observe the representation of the pose that actually emerges in that given moment when energy has been tapped into or released. Finding the pose is about how we respond or how we react to the experience while we're moving in and out of the shapes we're creating. In the classes I lead students to observe and observe how they organize and express the shapes of the called pose in a direct reflection of how they really are representing themselves, not only in the yoga class setting, but in the postures of life that we encounter in everyday living. So pretty much whatever posture you're taking on in the yoga class setting on your mat is really representative of how you're posturing yourself out in your daily life. We all know that through the demands of daily living that sometimes we are distracted and unaware and that we're actually moving through life on autopilot rather than seeking to experience life awake, aware, and fully present. And present to the comfortable and uncomfortable moments or seasons of life. The soft and hard times of life. And this is why we practice yoga and why dedicating to a daily consistent practice affords us the opportunity to move the energy, right? To release that stuck energy in the body, to tap into the energy of the body. And it affords us this opportunity to begin to know presence and awareness with more ease than effort. Everything's a balancing act. It's through the repetition of learning to stay alert, to notice, to focus, and to be aware to all sensations and experiences in the body and in the mind, whether it's in our yoga asanas or in our meditation practices and our mindfulness practices. And it's along with the power of the awareness of our breath, our inhales and exhales. And it's within all this reflection and practice that we find this most important posture of all that we can practice. And as a teacher, the most important posture that you will teach, and that is the posture of embodied consciousness. Understanding embodiment as the expression of or the act of giving a tangible or visible form to something, which in this context would be the representation of the yoga pose. Let me expand a little further and expanding this understanding of yoga poses even further to include the overall way of our being or those postures of life again that I've already referenced and that we have opportunity to experience and encounter fully aware and awake within this state of being, which is consciousness or this posture of consciousness. For you as a yoga teacher, this most important posture that you'll be teaching of embodied consciousness is dedicated to your ongoing pursuit to lead and guide students to practice this awareness in each and every shape that we now associate with yoga as the yoga poses, so that students can begin to practice the same embodiment off of their mat and alive and awake in their life experiences rather than moving through life on autopilot and in a lack of awareness. This is why the practice of yoga is a practice. It is ongoing. It's an ongoing pursuit or a quest, I like to call it. It isn't the attainment of, but rather the remembrance that this state of being is available to us and that we are capable of tapping into this state of being repeatedly and more often as we dedicate to a consistent practice of this experience. This is what we practice. And if you're listening and you are a yoga teacher, this is where you are leading and continually directing students. In this understanding, you can further examine and interpret that asana or the yoga postures can be likened to every single action and movement you make on a daily basis, which becomes the unification of consciousness found through the act of daily living. Isn't this then really the culmination of the phrase, living your yoga? This is what I've come to know of the practice. It's why I've continued the pursuit and that quest for 20 plus years now. It's ongoing. It's a state of never arriving and being okay in that state. And it's rather a state of ongoing awareness and within the quest of seeking out how I might remind and remember the state of being throughout my day and within the interactions I have with others. If you think about consciousness even further, and in my research, I found at least three primary and different meanings of consciousness. The first being functional awareness and response. To understand this meaning better, think about how quickly you can discern when someone you're engaged with or you're speaking with, if they're paying attention to what you're saying, or possibly when you begin to sense that they're drifting off. They're there, but they're not there. In this case, the person, right, that you're engaging with is no longer demonstrating a functional response of awareness. And you might even ask whether or not they're listening to you. This understanding of consciousness can then be framed in behavioral terms as seen from the outside. So this is something that takes place that you kind of as the outsider on the outside engaging person, you can sense this behavior. So how does this show up in a yoga class? I'll share an example from both the teacher's perspective and the student's. From the perspective of the teacher, this is when you are cueing or directing students into a particular pose, and the representation reflected back to you of what you've been cueing, the student might actually be taking on an entirely different shape or expression, or may totally seem zoned out. They may be in that behavioral response of really, I'm not sure if they're listening. Not that this is a bad thing, because we often cue students to make the practice their own. To support this example, I am talking about the potential lack of self-conscious awareness that might be taking place here, which might be a distraction involved or a lack of understanding of what they are even being invited into or where the class is being directed. You know, I often feel like that practice of yoga really is an opportunity for us to become better listeners, to listen to the guidance on the exterior that we receive from the teacher, but also that inner listening and the guidance we receive. And so in this example, when you're cueing and directing, so it may be actually that the student is zoned out in their functional response and awareness, or it may just be that they're a little confused and this is an indicator to you to clean up your language or choose a different way of directing and guiding them. I often notice this, yet I don't seek to fix or make the individual student conform to what I have cued. And for me, that's not important. Rather, it's important that I notice as a teacher and then possibly discern whether that further guidance with my language directives would benefit the situation. Sometimes it's just best to just leave them alone. You know, students are smart and capable, and they can figure it out, and they need to figure that out. We need to give them the space that creates their independence, not their dependence. Oftentimes, I just discern that this is part of the process of becoming alert and awake. And so I would rather not disrupt this process for the student. Another way to understand how this might show up, this functional response of awareness and how it might show up through the observation of engagement within a student's expression, it's kind of like it shows up in the extension, I believe, out into the limbs of the shape of the pose. In this case, there might actually be a disconnect in proprioceptive awareness, and this is represented with a lack of cohesion in all parts of the body engaging into the actual shape the student's creating. I use this as an example, not a judgment, because this is also a part of the process of becoming aware of what the wholeness of the body is interpreting and representing within the shapes of the yoga poses. This also encompasses the meaning of consciousness within the understanding of self-consciousness, which is another meaning or way to view the understanding of consciousness. This is when we reflect inwardly upon how we are relating to the external experiences and interactions with life and the world around us. I'll also add here that the lack of engagement that can show up in the opposite expression as well, and I call it working the pose. This is where the student's expression is exaggerated in the pose. The breath is jagged, it's shallow, it's almost like just hyperventilating, it's almost cardio-like. And this is where the student's expression and exertion of energy is expanding beyond a balanced state of that effort and ease. This might actually be more personality driven, but it shows up in the yoga class setting. This is an opportunity for you as teacher to teach the collective within a Goldilocks observation. You can choose one pose to actually cue and direct all students to find an expression that is too little, and that would be a lack of kind of awareness of organization. Another expression that to them is too much, which is working the pose, and then culminate with the just right expression. And of course, this is the physicality of the shape, but also the organic breath awareness of how the breath is supporting the shape. An expression where they feel at balance between the effort of the pose and the quality of ease, all found within the embodied consciousness or posture they are creating. This is a valuable teaching tool and a valuable way to teach this most important posture of embodied consciousness. Whether you're a teacher or not, I encourage you to give this exercise of embodied consciousness or practicing this posture a try. And the next time you practice, see if you can notice the state of being. So how does functional awareness and responses show up for students in response to the teacher's directive of the class? I've given an example from the teacher's perspective and how you might see this show up from students or reflected back to you. Now, I want to give you an example from a student's perspective of how this might be perceived on your behalf as a student. I've experienced this in more than one class where the teacher resides on their mat pretty much the entire class and never really looks out to engage with us, with the students. In one particular class experience that comes to mind, I knew the teacher was cueing from memorization because she made a comment which was used as an encouragement, and the comment she made would have had to actually meant she was seeing what we were doing. I looked at her in this moment because somehow I just knew that she was saying something that wasn't congruent with what she was seeing, because you know what? She had her eyes closed. And then another time, she was actually facing away from us. So I knew that she couldn't actually see what we were doing, which that is scary. This is a clear example of a disconnect in the consciousness of the experience or the functional ability to be in engagement, right, and to see what's happening. It was even an example that lacked credibility, I believe. It lacked trust that the teacher even knew the experience of the practice for herself. And this is why it's so important as teachers that we remain students and dedicated ones, dedicated with consistency. How can we expect to teach others from a place that we do not know? It's really an integrity situation at that point. you won't be able to, or at least you won't be very effective doing so. And you certainly won't be able to find sustainability as a yoga teacher within that approach. When you think about the most important yoga posture that you will teach as a yoga teacher, and you seek to better understand this concept within the broad stroke of your awareness and teaching methodology, then you will also begin to experience what I like to call meeting people where they are. In this case, you are meeting the students you lead where they are, not where you want them to be. There is a difference, and within this teaching methodology and the understanding that the most important yoga pose is the ability for students to consciously embody the experience of the shapes they are creating from an alert space of awareness, then you will use your language to direct and shift students and their focus from the outside attachment to what the shape looks like to the internal, subjective, conscious experience found within the shape. I want to share with you now a couple of tangible and effective ways that you can facilitate and cultivate an elevated learning environment where students begin to practice this most important yoga posture. It's important to note that this is the pose of the entire class. Once again, it's the posture of the experience. The pose doesn't end, and the pose actually shifts in and out of differing shapes, but the overall objective is the same. The objective is the ongoing and continual pursuit of being in the state of embodied consciousness. I liken this to one-pointed awareness, the quality or state of being where I am doing the one thing and only the one thing. It's what teaching is for me. Or I am also a singer, and when I sing, I just sing, because if I try to do anything else, then you know what happens. Well, I get nervous, I forget the lyrics, I no longer embody the experience of the song, the melody, or the embodied experience of being present. It's the same with teaching. This is why it is so important that you have a strong foundation of sequencing knowledge and application, and a method that supports growth from teaching the same way, the same method, each and every class you teach. The method doesn't change. It doesn't have to. You aren't trying to reinvent the wheel each and every time you teach. You aren't feeling compelled to spend hours upon hours creating an intricately detailed and creative sequence, because that method ultimately is unsustainable. That method doesn't promote or support growth for you as a teacher or for the students you lead. So take a moment and evaluate how much time you spend creating sequences. And could you devote your time instead into the pursuit of understanding better how to teach this most important posture? If you spend hours creating and recreating sequences, then most likely when you step into the classroom, you will be immersed and consumed in your thinking mind that seeks to recall the memorized sequence. When you're in your thinking mind, you're no longer going to be present for the space or seeing and meeting the needs of the students in the space. The thinking mind will quickly shift you out of the felt experience of conscious embodiment. Certainly, in the beginning stages of teaching, there is a time when you are absorbing all of the information that was transferred to you during your YTT, and you've been applying and working through, applying the structure, applying this process, and being in the process, but it can feel possibly awkward, and you're still trying to remember, absorb, and know your class plan and sequence. It's important, especially if you are a vinyasa teacher, that you understand the rhythm and the pace of the class and how to lead this effectively and skillfully so that you can sustain or support students in their ability to sustain that one pointed focus of awareness. And it becomes that functional consciousness and response. And you want to hold that sacred. So when you're consumed with creative sequencing, that could actually turn into a distraction or a roadblock for students to really be able to tap into that one-pointed awareness, or the most important posture that you are trying to teach, of that embodied consciousness. It really begins with a solid understanding and foundation of sequencing. This is something I discuss with the mentoring clients that I work with, because it's such an important foundation, and you want to build upon a solid foundation of understanding when it comes to sequencing and the pace of the class, because this is an important aspect that ultimately impacts your effectiveness as a teacher. I think this is a misconception and a muddiness of our view and our role as teacher. I believe we get caught up thinking we'll be effective if we are the most creative and that we create the most intricate sequence, when in fact, what we are doing in that is most likely a distraction, unless it's imbued with that stream and that consciousness of embodied consciousness, unless you're that skillful to be weaving that in to the intricacy of sequencing, then I'm pretty sure your sequencing, if you're caught up and devoted to spending all that time in that, thinking that's your role as teacher, you could quite honestly be a distraction and a hindrance for students really tapping in and experiencing the most important posture within the class setting. So the best advice that I've ever been given and will give to other teachers is to keep teaching. Keep absorbing, keep applying all that you continue to learn through real-time teaching experiences. Evaluate your role, evaluate how you prepare to go in to teach and hold the space. What is your focus? What's your objective? And what is guiding your teaching methodology? Through this time that you have in the application and within the process of applying and teaching the real-time teaching experiences, you will grow and learn so much through and simply through the act of teaching. But consider keeping your sequencing simple rather than so complex that might shift you into your thinking mind more than your ability to support and facilitate a space of this embodied consciousness and awareness. Once you've dedicated the time required within the first phase of teaching and you start to personalize and own your teaching methodology, you will begin to understand better why the posture of one-pointed awareness and embodied consciousness is the most important asana that you are really teaching and leading students to experience. As a teacher, your teaching methodology will then focus on being prepared to step into each and every class you teach with a solid sequencing approach that is constant yet adaptable, so that you can step in, you can read the energy of the room, you can meet the needs of the students in real time, not in the imaginary thinking mind time, but in the felt experience, the present space of the yoga class. This method also allows you as the teacher to embody confidence, and confidence not loud and showy, but a quiet confidence. Confidence that is rooted within the experience that you have actually encountered, explored, and continue to pursue within your own deep understanding of the practice. It is through the application of knowledge that wisdom is generated, and the space of that inner listening and self-consciousness emerges that I have spoken of earlier. Lastly, if you truly desire to be effective and skillful as a yoga teacher, it will require your dedication towards becoming a facilitator who leads, knowing the importance and the impact of this most important yoga posture or asana that we could ever teach or experience, the asana of awareness and seamless consciousness. Being an effective yoga teacher isn't about projecting your preference or style of practice on others. It's about how you can support the creation of a space where students encounter independence within the freedom of choosing and creating the experience that they wish to have, not only on their mats in the yoga class setting, but out in their lives off of the mat. Before you head off into the rest of your day, if you are a yoga teacher listening, I want to encourage and invite you to schedule a free 45-minute mentoring call with me. Within the worthy endeavor of teaching, it is important that you have the resources and support you need that will guide and equip you along the teaching pathway. I am passionate about providing this type of support and mentoring to yoga teachers. What do you have to lose? The call is free, and I want to connect, meet, and hear all about your desires as a teacher, as well as your obstacles as a teacher, and how I might help support you in refining and growing into that desired, perceived space as a teacher. In this call, I will share with you further how mentorship can make a huge impact in your ability to lead and teach with confidence and build a successful career within the service industry teaching yoga. Go to my website, sandyraper.com, and schedule your free call today. Once again, what do you have to lose? Thanks for joining me today, and I will look forward to spending time with you in the next episode. Hey, are you looking for a way to jumpstart your yoga asana practice? Well, I have a new free resource for you on my website at sandyraper.com. Head on over to my website, and at the bottom of my homepage, you're going to find a free mini video practice session with me. Submit your email and you'll receive the video right away. I have titled the practice A Place to Start, and I have designed this practice to be an accessible and mini practice that will support you in creating consistency and a daily commitment to spending time with yourself on your mat. So head on over and get your free mini practice session today. Thank you for joining me for today's episode. Until we meet again, remember to begin, to become, and to expand beyond.